Well, now to a story out of suburban Houston that's starting to sound all too familiar. A gunman shot 6 people to death, 4 of them children, in what looks like it was a domestic dispute late yesterday. For some perspective on this, we want to go far from Houston, far from the U.S. for that matter, to Australia, home to about 23 million people. There was a mass shooting there almost 20 years ago, prompting the country to change its gun laws, and it hasn't had a mass shooting since. Tim Fischer was Deputy Prime Minister at the time. He's with us now via Skype from his ranch in Australia. Welcome to Here and Now.
Greetings, Jeremy.
Well, when you hear about another mass shooting in the U.S., as we just had in Houston, what do you think?
Look, I'm deeply concerned. There is another way, a sensible way, and a way which still does not mean any numerical restriction on guns. You can have a sensible policy on guns and reduce the number of people being killed by guns and the gun massacres.
Well, take us back to the turning point in Australia. Back in 1996, there was a gun massacre in Port Arthur. Tell us what happened there.
The Sunday afternoon, it was a tourist picnic area and cafeteria and museum. And suddenly this young person picked up a weapon with multi-firing capability and slaughtered some 35 people. And it was the catalyst for John Howard, our Prime Minister at the time, and I was his Deputy Prime Minister, to take it to the state governments that we now needed to harmonise gun laws, to step away from the pathway advocated by the NRA of laissez-faire, and to have a sensible set of gun controls without taking away the right for people to have recreational shooting, sporting shooting, Olympic shooting, along with farmers and ranchers having their requirements as well.
And for comparison, by the way, 35 killed at Port Arthur. There were 32 killed at Virginia Tech in 2007, 27 in Newtown, Connecticut. That includes the gunman back in 2012, and 13 killed at Columbine. So there must have just been absolute national shock at 35 killed.
Yes, it was. But nevertheless, it was a very difficult issue to prosecute in the public square. There was bitter opposition. I was hung in effigy at a public meeting at a place called Gympie in Queensland. It was a pretty ugly scene, a very wild meeting, noisy meeting, but ultimately a meeting that was swung by a 12-year-old teenage student standing up and arguing the case for common sense and arguing that it wasn't taking away everybody's guns, but was providing a new template of gun safety, a new template where essentially the suburbs were being drained of the semi-automatics and automatics. And we've turned a corner. There has not been one gun massacre in Australia since 1996. That does not mean that there may not be in the future, but it will come after a couple of thousand people's lives have been saved. Various people estimate around 200 lives a year annually as a direct consequence of the firearms legislation here in Australia.
Well, tell us exactly what you did, and let's start with the semi-automatic restrictions. What are they exactly?
It essentially took out the certain size shotguns. It took out the semi-automatics and automatics from being legally available to people, but equally sporting rifles and other 22s and even more bolt-action type were permissible on farm, were permissible in sporting shooters and recreational shooting clubs and hunting and the like. And there is no numerical restriction on the number of rifles. But on top of that, you were required to have a shooter's license issued by each state government after you've done a preliminary test. And that's obviously held against a harmonized set of registers across Australia. And that, I understand, is what is feared most in some ways, is having both a shooter's license scheme and a weapons registration scheme, the two big asks here in Australia. They were legislated for within the 12 months following the massacre at Port Arthur, adopted along with a gun buyback scheme. And the result is plain to see and cannot be denied by the NRA.
Well, and tell us about that gun buyback, because we've had gun buybacks in the United States, but this was a mandatory national gun buyback.
Involving about $500 million, involving a added levy through what's called the Medicare levy down here, raising the money necessary to proceed with a buyback. It greatly reduced accidental deaths by guns and homicide deaths and suicide deaths.
But there must have been people in Australia who did not sell back their guns, people that maybe shouldn't have even had their guns in the first place, whether they be criminals or whatever.
No legislation can be claimed to be adopted without someone breaking the law, and some have been apprehended in breaking the law. But it made a difference in two ways. It essentially, it did take out the semi-automatics, the oversized, overpowered weapons from the suburbs of Australia. It also caused people to think, well, do I really need a gun? If I do, I'll apply and get it. But if I don't really need it, I won't go down that pathway. And so we really did walk away from a policy of more and more guns. And we did so perhaps recalling some of the comments that many have made, including Wendy Whitmire from the gun control group Mums Demand Action in the USA. If more guns made us safer, the US would be the safest nation in the world. You are not. You are 10 to 15 times more likely to be shot dead in the USA per capita than Australia. And by the way, you are even safer in Italy than the USA with regard to guns when looked at like for like on a per capita basis.
We're speaking with Tim Fischer, former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia. You can weigh in on this at our website, hereandnow.org, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/hereandnowradio. It's Here and Now.
History has proven, again, the truth that President Obama and anti-freedom activists everywhere deny and try to suppress. The truth that firearms in the hands of good people save lives.
Why did Chris die? Chris died because of craven, irresponsible politicians and the NRA. They talk about gun rights. What about Chris's right to live? When will enough people say, stop this madness? We don't have to live like this.
That was Richard Martinez after his son Christopher was killed in that massacre in Santa Barbara in May. Before that, we heard the National Rifle Association CEO Wayne LaPierre speaking at a conference in April. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about gun control with Tim Fischer, the former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, where a mass shooting in 1996 prompted an overhaul of gun laws, and there hasn't been one since. Tim Fischer, one of the things you did was add a 28-day waiting period for people who wanted to buy guns. Tell us about that.
It was a cooling off period. It was the complete opposite of having no background checks at gun shows. And if the US was to do anything, surely it should reinstate that and stand up to the NRA, which risks being completely put offside with its own supporters and the community at large the next time a massive gun massacre occurs. So there's been another one this week in Texas, one in California, one in the state of Washington in recent last couple of months, and elsewhere. And indeed, the long weekend of your national holiday brought forth a range of shootings, over a dozen killed in Chicago. You've got to face down such bad anomalies as there being no background check whatsoever for anyone who wants to rock up to a gun show, right through to the Montana and Georgia state legislation, which now says it's okay for you to take a gun into a nightclub of some kinds and into a bar and a restaurant. It just builds on builds and builds the number of guns around, and it has led indeed to people carrying guns still being killed in shootouts in the USA in recent weeks.
But I can hear a gun control advocate listening to this and saying, well, it's easier said than done. In this country, there's such opposition to that. There's a strong feeling by gun owners and even non-gun owners that people should have a right to bear arms in this country, and that anything that infringes on that is against the Constitution. How did you manage to overcome that hurdle in Australia to the extent that the same feelings exist there?
Jeremy, that's a good question, and we took the debate to the public square. We stood up at meeting after meeting. John Howard, Prime Minister, myself as Deputy Prime Minister and leader of a party with particular membership from country areas and members and senators from country areas, including many from Queensland, went to meeting after meeting and got out there and argued the case. And I would ask Michael Bloomberg to stand up and challenge John Bolton to a debate in the public square on the East Coast, in Chicago and on the West Coast, sooner rather than later. And I know Bloomberg is taking steps. That's the only way you'll turn the tide. That and, sadly, a massacre that goes beyond the pale, a massacre that hits up towards 100 dead, a massacre that occurs in a peaceful suburb as one did in Texas this week. Suddenly, there will be a will there, and the boilover will be such that the NRA will be regretting it did not seek at least the reinstatement of magazine limitations that have existed for 10 years and weren't construed as being a breach of the Second Amendment, at least a background check at gun shows. No intelligent person can justify allowing no check whatsoever for people to buy guns in the 21st century.
But were you worried for your own political future by getting up and standing up in those town meetings and saying what you did?
Yes, it was tough, and we had a swing against the government at the subsequent elections for a couple of reasons, of which guns was probably not one of those reasons, all things considered. But yes, I was bitterly attacked. I was directly attacked. I was hung in effigy. Some said, look, you're a Vietnam veteran, Tim Fisher. You're a rancher or farmer background. You, above all, should be defending our rights to unrestricted size of weapons, number of weapons, and a laissez-faire approach on guns. I am a Vietnam veteran. I weighed the pros and cons and supported John Howard and the harmonised legislation because I could see this was Australia's chance to jump through the hoops, take some pain, withdraw private property from individuals, but pay them just compensation. The result is there for everyone to see. On any calculation, at least 10 times, and on some calculations, up to 15 times safer than the streets of the USA and places like Duncan, Oklahoma, where a young Australian jogging along peacefully was cut down and slaughtered by guns in the USA not so long ago.
And we should remind people, by the way, that you are a gun owner even to this day.
Yes, I am, happily, and use a gun on the farm, and not so much for recreational reasons, but for essential reasons, with livestock needing to be put down and rabbit and fox control. And so be it. I am a happy owner of guns, a rancher down under, a Vietnam veteran, but one that fully supports the harmonised laws that have made a huge difference here in Australia, made Australia so much safer than the USA, who's still has this incredible circumstance where you can have no background checks applied to a person buying a gun, almost any kind of gun, at a gun show in the USA.
So, Tim Fisher, do you think that anything like that could happen in the US?
It will take enormous will. It will take an enormous effort by people like Bloomberg and others. It needs to be taken to the main street, to the high street, to the public square. Someone should mount a train out of Baltimore B&O Museum, special rolling stock, and roll it from Baltimore right across to Sacramento and down the coast and make it a campaign train because actually when you see some of the more accurate polling, more balanced polling around the suburbs of Chicago and elsewhere, it's, I think, a case that can be mounted and can be won, and can be won within the context of the Second Amendment, which does not strike down all gun measures, has not struck down previous gun measures, such as the precedent that existed for a magazine limitation for some 10 years under Clinton and the early part of the Bush presidency, as well as background checks.
Tim Fischer is a former member of the Australian Parliament, former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, speaking to us via Skype from his ranch in Australia. Tim Fischer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you indeed.